All right, we're in the record mode. Good. So everybody has a ballot in front of them, so just mark down who you'd like to have for chair, and then we'll come around with the magic box. So the, so did we just? Okay, so we have two names for chair. We have Dean Smicer and Brian Kaiser. You guys want to let your names stand?
I'll let mine go and I'll let Brian take. Okay.
Brian, you are chair.
I dropped mine.
So I guess
they're going to arm wrestle now.
Fight.
The next order of business will be selection of a vice chair then.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. He's supposed to be here too, isn't he?
Yes. When you get 70, you know, you got senior going.
Don't say that.
I comment him so bad.
Don't say that.
I comment him though. I comment him bad.
It is a bad word.
Because it's my number this year.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I know. That surprised a lot of people.
But wow.
That's my number this year. I will be shortly.
I would have never booked that.
No?
But you know what I...
You know, thank you.
No, I really wouldn't have.
I just turned 60 and I said I got 15 years. Of being hopefully able to do if they're fixed my knee. I can't even do that now.
I don't know. I don't know if we can count on anything, though, really.
Well, I don't think you can count on more than that.
No.
But even to be able to do things, people say, oh, they're saving us for retirement.
No, save it.
Do it. Do it. Because you're in no shape to do it. You're not in shape.
If I'll tell you the thing
don't
is,
count on any
been there, done that. Been there, done that. If you didn't do it, you ain't going to be doing it.
Jeez, I went out and mowed the back hill the other night, and after I finished that, I had to go and sit down, and knees wouldn't take it anymore.
So first you ask what's going on.
So we've got two names. One of them is not present. So Reed's not present. So can we put his name in if he's not here?
I don't.
No.
Generally, I would
have some kind of confirmation.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Safe by majority. Anyway.
So all the other votes are for Dean. There's only was one other name.
Oh, well,
Ben. So do we still need to?
So we ran across this, I think, with police advisory earlier this month. We have two names. One of those is not here to confirm that it's Reed, not here to confirm that he'd like to serve as the vice chair.
Yeah, and he didn't give any indication in writing that he would do that, so then we don't.
Okay. There we go.
Well, congratulations.
They usually have to indicate.
Yes. Yeah. You need a motion to destroy the ballot.
So moved
and seconded.
Oh, second. Okay.
It's been moved and seconded that the ballots be destroyed.
Who moved it?
Dean and Pam seconded that. And so over here as well, but we'll just take one.
But not burning them, right?
No.
Controlled.
No, it's after 7. We're good to go.
Mr. Chair, I believe it's not on the agenda, but perhaps because we have
a member.
We're going
to go around the table. Yes, I already had that down.
Awesome.
So we'll start with Herb. Introduce yourself. We have a new member with us tonight, Patricia Sharp, member at large.
My name is Herbert Seymour, and I'm a member at large.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Emily Bowers. Started my second year on the committee. I'm a captain in Headville Fire Department, and I'm also a member of the town fire department in Bridgewater.
Oh, you're talking too.
Hi, I'm Sandra. Mm-hmm.
I don't like any time.
I know you are, right?
You know me already.
Yeah, we talk for a while.
Oh, you know more than one or two people then. Wow. So they know you. I'm Brian Kaiser, chair of District 1 and 2 Fire Commission.
I'm Dean Smeister. I'm DC of Day Spring Fire Department.
Carolyn Bolivar gets in the mayor for the municipality.
Hi, I'm Pam Newley, counselor of the municipality.
He's sitting in my chair. I
And Carolyn's sitting in my chair. I'm the deputy CAO, Alex DeMare. Yes.
I'm reaching.
All right, so she knows you, Alex, is what you're saying as well. Okay. Excellent. So that's Pam down there. No, Pam over there, excuse me. Okay, you're looking for a motion to approve the agenda as circulated? It's been moved. Do you have a seconder? Seconded. Questions on the motion? Question's been called. All those in favor, raise their right hand. Against? Motion carried. Business arising from the minutes, 4.1.
So policy 36, just an update. It's gone through council for their 7-day approval or ahead of time, so they get the notice 7 days prior to reviewing the policy, and it's going back to council on May the 14th for its final viewing.
No. All right, that's good. 4.2 is actually just for information. Page 2, it's member at large vacancy, which is the appointment by council of Patricia Sharp to this committee. And item number 5 is the LRFES report, and I was not at LRFES meeting. Dean, were you at that meeting?
It was just the annual meet?
No, the annual meeting's coming up in May.
This is Lunenburg Region.
Oh, yeah. No.
Okay.
Yes, I was. What was we trying to think what we. It wasn't a big meeting.
Yeah, it was pretty small.
Was it? I wasn't able to.
It was my birthday. I wasn't going to do that.
Really? Oh, I wouldn't think. So I'm with you.
I wasn't really paying.
Was there anyone there?
We had quite a few there. We spoke on.
Training came up.
Some training came up. A little bit on the fit tester. We talked to
the strategic committee was going to come back with some information. I think on the number of firefighters that wear breathing apparatus wearers, and then they're going to talk about some training stuff too, I think.
Right.
Okay. Yes, Carolyn. Sorry.
I guess, Patricia, I don't know your background. Is it fire service at all?
No. So I hear them using acronyms up here that I am sure you don't have a clue what they're talking about when they're talking about fit testing and whatever. So if we could be a little clearer so that people do understand what we're talking about in those lines, please. Yeah.
Yes, I'm kind of in support of not having summer meetings to give individuals some time off, and July and August, in my opinion, that's just my opinion, I think is good to leave it off the calendar, and we still will be able to make it up, I think, but it's just that, you know, last year it worked out all right, but the year before we lost some vacation. We canceled because of vacations. But support staff and staff have vacations, and July and August generally when a lot of people take their time off. So I'm asking the members to consider not having a meeting in July.
Do you want that in motion?
So the next meeting would be September?
Yes.
The regular? Okay.
Right.
Would you like that in motion?
Well, yes. I guess if we have to agree to it, then yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we not have the July meeting for over the summer and resume our meeting in the first Thursday of September.
All right. So moved and seconded. Any questions on that motion? In hearing none, all those in favor signify by raising their right hand.
The chair always has the prerogative of calling a meeting if he needs to.
Yes, that's correct. And against. Motion carried. So items 3 and 4, you can see that I added them because I kind of would like to... 6.2 and 6.3, yes. I added them to the agenda for tonight because I knew this meeting, it's nice to kind of get started and to have a look at a plan of what we're going to do. And really and truly, all we have is 6 meetings as a group to kind of accomplish the things that are kind of moving along and... So the committee work plan is I'd like to discuss, throw around a few things that we can start getting worked at immediately so that we can have time to, you know, sometimes, like let's jump to the fit tester because I know that LRFES is looking at that. But the fit tester is, and I'm going to let you explain that to Patricia Sharp.
Sure. So what he means by that, firefighters wear a breathing apparatus on their back with a face piece, and the face piece, all departments don't do it, but a lot of departments do use, there's a machine that you hook up to your face piece, and you have to breathe and talk and move around different ways to change the shape of your face, and then it registers how much ear leakage you have, and if it's over a certain amount of ear leakage, then the machine will tell you that you failed, and it'll test you for 3 different size masks to see which one is the best fit for you, so you know that if it says you pass with a medium, that's the mask that you need to wear if you're going into a dangerous environment, right, or a hazardous environment. So that's what it really is utilized for. So that's kind of what Brian was alluding to with that, what it means.
So some of the important things that we do at this meeting is looking at the health and safety of firefighters and developing policies to kind of move in that direction. And last year, or just in item 4.1, as an example, we had revisions to the policy to make SCBA testing requirement for fire departments to have done in order to be registered as a fire and emergency service provider in the municipality of Lunenburg. So this fit tester is, in my opinion, kind of in that area where you're looking at those that are using the equipment that requires proper fit, should be tested by proper people to ensure that they are safe to be used by that individual. So I want to start some dialogue with Chris on it, though. And
so I did have a conversation with Chief Mullick today. He called me up when he saw that on the agenda, and he sent me an email after we talked about it. I said, "Well, put something in writing, and I'll take it to the committee." So this is what Chief Mullick sent in response to that. He says, "Due to the issue around departments doing SCBA mass fit testing, he heard some in Lunenburg Regional has said that they have all fit testing done by third party. That's what Lunenburg Regional was suggesting. He said that Northfield does have a third party to do their fit test, and mostly for scheduling and the amount of members that they do. So they have quite a large number of breathing apparatus people. The Weir BA, our breathing apparatus. He said I'm not sure how he means to say that, but anyway, so this is not a choice. He said easy task to set up and multiple visits to do that many people. So that's why they bring in a third party that can schedule around it, I guess. It should be up to individual departments to choose. Lunenburg Regional has a fit tester that departments are able to use, and he said that I helped a couple of departments one time to get to use it. My thought is the committee should be focused on helping firefighters get that we're SCBA get fit tested, and not those who do the testing.
Yes, in fact, that's what I'm talking about here. Is actually,
and he support that. That if you wear an SCBA, you should have a mass fit test, but not forcing at a cost and scheduling like mayor for some third party to come and do it. So he would like to see fit testing be done, but departments are able to do it if they wish to do so. That's what he's saying. That's what he told
How
me on
he
the phone.
Saying it?
He said that he support that if you wear an SCBA, you should be fit tested, but I do not support forcing at a cost and scheduling like mayor for some to do third party when we can do it in-house. So that's what his thoughts are.
So does every department have a qualified person to do this?
Not presently, no.
No. So I guess is that some service that they're looking for us to provide, or how is this something Cummings would do? Is this something that who does it?
There's companies who do this.
Yeah, Cummings does it for some of them around the area. Halifax does them too. It all depends, but I think Cummings does a fair amount of them. The fit tester, the one that they're using in Lunenburg Regional, was that calibrated, you know, this year? Or?
Well, we did have it calibrated, yes.
So then it's good to use.
If there's someone qualified to use that.
So
right?
I don't know. Like I asked him about that too, and I said, you know, there's liabilities and stuff. And he said, well, every time we roll a truck out the door, there's liability. Like, you know, like, so how far do we want to take it? That was his kind of take on it when I talked to him today. So I said I would bring his thoughts forward and go from that.
So from a training perspective, is this something that we could offer to fire departments to have someone qualified in each department to be able to do this? Is there a certification that you get? Fit testing.
Yeah, when they originally brought the machine, the company came in and went through the functionality of it with anybody that was going to utilize it. And it wasn't really hard to use. You hook it up to a laptop, put it on a person's face, and hit go, and it does its thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some departments didn't feel comfortable doing that, and some said they were comfortable with doing it, right? Because the machine tells you whether it's good or bad. But they didn't want to assume any risk if something were to happen, right? But
that's the thing.
So I support going forward with fit testing, as we all have. But how then do we... I don't know what the cost is. I don't know if we're talking a small amount of money or a large amount of money.
I think it's $35 or $40 a firefighter to do just a fit test. That's a ballpark number that I think I've got here a while back. I can't swear to it, but that's one of the numbers that was tossed around to me here a while back. I might have it on my phone if I wanted
to. But this is not, and I think Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but you mentioned earlier that there's some departments that have very few people that are using these. Like, I know that in our department we have a lot,
yeah.
Right? But there are some that have.
What is a lot?
The whole works of them, all 39 or 45 of them.
Oh, so it
yeah.
Could be.
And we're having that done. We do that now.
So the breathing apparatus is worn by firefighters who are doing like interior work,
or exterior,
or exterior.
But
okay,
so
do you have to have a level 1 before your department will let you do that?
I don't know.
That seems like a bigger safety risk to me.
Yeah, okay, yes. Okay.
Wouldn't it be beneficial to look into having someone in each department trained to do it rather than burden them with another cost? Maybe a one-time fee to have someone certified would...
I'm just going to kind of jump in there. At a previous Lunenburg Regional meeting, we had a discussion on that, and people were concerned about the liability side of it is having, you know, the person who does this is if something happens, someone's going to blame that person. If you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, I mean, we have pump testing, and we have SCBA testing, and this is just kind of the next step of this, right?
When you do the test, it's done up in four, I think four different modules. I think it's four. And you have to pass all four of those modules in the test as you go through. And you got to be at so many parts per million. And if you don't have a good fit in that one thing, you can fail one, but you can't fail two. Then you automatically, then you're done. You have to change to a different mask, or you have... So when they first came with this years ago, Todd Darenberg trained a bunch of us. And if you're comfortable in running it, it's not hard to run. And it's a fail-safe thing, because it'll tell you, yes, you passed, no, you didn't. And there's no way you can fudge it.
I recently got training on a different, like another system. You also can't set it up. It won't let you proceed if you don't set it up right.
No.
Like if you don't get that mixture of the alcohol and if the atmosphere isn't right, it won't even let you start the test.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done it enough times, Chris. You've seen that. But.
So you're saying it's foolproof?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing was foolproof.
No.
It would be hard for you to even proceed with the test if you don't know how to set it up.
Yeah.
Because of the technical requirements around it, so...
Yes, I agree. Some departments aren't, they're, you know, they don't want that
responsibility,
but then there's some departments that we are used to doing it. We've been doing it every year. And we got some that there's no issues with it, and we feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, the other side of it, though, is that at LRFES as well, is the cost of these fit testers. The equipment to do this is like...
That porter count that we own right now is $40,000.
So
to test them?
That's to buy them.
To buy the machine.
To buy the tester.
So there's another side to this, right? Like, you know, where the companies that do this provide the hardware and software to actually come in and do that.
I think it should just be up to the individual department, whatever they think that they want to go get a...
One or the other.
One or the other. If they want to do
it
themselves.
As long as you've got a document that shows it was tested.
Yep.
But they could partner with another department as well, correct?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Nothing says you can't.
Like, I think, if I remember back a couple Lunenburg Regional meetings ago when they were talking about this, one of the things that came up was they never had operating capital for sending it out annually to have it calibrated. So they were using funds, but they don't have a lot of funds. They're still working on funds from 10 years ago when they had the MFCA, Maritime Fire Chiefs Conference in Lunenburg. So they're still using some funding from that, but they don't have any other funding source coming in. And that was one of the things they talked about was, like, just to think, have it calibrated. I'm not sure what it costs to have it calibrated.
It's
annually.
Around $1,500.
Around $1,500. So.
And that's an annual thing, actually.
Until a time comes when it doesn't pass that or whatever. But.
And they are looking, I'm correct in looking at new one.
We looked at one, the same exact thing as what we got, an updated one. I think it was like $41,000 or $42,000. And then there's another one that's... There's another brand name, I think, that we could buy two for that same price or a little under. So, like, depending on what it is, it's quite a bit of cost differential.
I just want to go back then to, would it be abnormal to have a training day for people to be able to be fit tested with their masks? Is that something professional development-wise? That because there are departments out there that just don't have the resources to do that. They may be able to pay, I guess, the $40, but I don't know how many. What's the average BA in a department? You're saying 40 in yours,
well,
but that's a lot.
Hours is a lot.
That's
yes.
A lot.
But
is it 10, 12?
See, that's
is it more than that?
Probably 15 or 18 in our department.
Okay.
Yeah, the strategic committee for Lunenburg Regional is reaching out to fire departments now and saying, how many SCBA wearers do you have? and then they're trying to get a number to see what the number actually is and what the cost would be affiliated with that number of firefighters that actually wear the face, like the SCBA units, right? So they don't know what that number is right now.
So in our situation, with policy development, you're looking at this from whether we are requiring a firefighter to have a fit testing done to the apparatus that that person is using. Is that not where we're at with it? I mean, whether whoever certifies or whoever's going to buy or whatever, are we looking at funding it from the MODL to buy a piece of equipment, or is it something that people pay $35 a year, like we do with SCBA testing, same thing, you know, and we have our bunker gear checked as well.
So I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm probably going to get myself in trouble when I say this, but I'm going to say it because it's important. I think we need to look at some standards, maybe not making it a policy that this has to be done in a policy format, but I think Lunenburg Regional needs to look at some standards for level one training, and that's basic firefighter training. That's what it really is, and yes. They are moving more and more towards that.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't do anything without basic training, and firefighters, if they're going to be moving to red tag, they should have at least the basic firefighter training at level one. Whether it's just a level one trained or a level one certified, however they want to go. And I'm going to say something here that's going to get me in trouble. I'm going to say it because it aggravates me and it really makes me nervous. When you go on fire scenes and see firefighters wearing breathing apparatus and they take the face piece off and they have full beards or they have a lot of hair on their face.
How that could even be tight.
So, well, you're going to lose air from your face piece. And, you know, you're supposed to be clean shaven when you wear a breathing apparatus, right? But Nova Scotia, the Occupational Health and Safety Policy does not cover volunteer firefighters. So there's nothing in that policy that says a firefighter that's a volunteer has to have a clean-shaven face, can't have growth for 48 hours, can't have a mustache below his lip, can't have a goatee where the seal is. There's nothing that says volunteers because we don't fall into that category.
Is that some type of discrimination?
That's just how the Occupational Health and Safety is in the province.
I wonder how WCB would look at that.
So that's a good question.
Yeah.
So I've had questions from WCB similar to that in the past. WCB is a no-fault insurance. So it doesn't matter what happens, WCB will cover you for whatever happens.
Okay, Dean.
Just for instance, and I did this to prove a point last year, I did my SCBA mass test the way I am, got a complete fit test.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever. Complete seal.
Mm-hmm.
No, but that's proven fact
that it can it be sealed. And sealed.
But yeah. You get a seal when you're hanging out in the comfort of your fire station. Can you keep that seal when you're in a 600-degree structure fire and you're sweating like a crazy? That's the point. It's not just about fit testing. That. It's about maintaining that seal when you're in the hazardous environment.
But kind of outside the box.
No, I think it's good discussion.
The only thing I'm saying is everybody's doing the same test. Mm-hmm. Who says that I'm not? You go in the same thing at I grant you 100%. You're not going to have any. But who says that when you go in that same temperature and the same environment that your mass is not going to leak? We don't know. We don't know.
I know it does because I have felt it.
There you go.
And that's a mass that I have been fit tested for multiple times.
There you go. See?
Equipment fails.
Yep.
So
there's nothing you can do about it.
All we can do is try to develop some general sort of guidelines to help us maybe prevent that.
So it is a health and safety issue then, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, to a degree.
Yes? Mm-hmm. Alex?
I guess I'd like to piggyback on Chris's comment. I think that it would be helpful for the committee to focus on what's your best bang for your buck. If you think about the risk to a firefighter who has a seal that's been tested by someone that's not a professional. I'm not in the fire service, but it seems to me like a larger risk is, are there folks who are, I think you'd call it a red tag? So are there folks entering into dangerous zones that don't have a basic level of training? And if that is the case, I would I would urge Lunenburg Regional and this committee to think about what steps are we taking to reduce that risk, because that sounds to me like a larger risk than the seal on someone's mask, especially because we're making progress on that front in terms of like testing equipment and those kinds of things, but we haven't been able to make any progress yet on the training front. And I think that the committee itself identified that as important when we came out of our workshops last year, and we identified, as you've pointed out, Mr. Chair, we do have a work plan that we'd like to make progress on. And
yes,
one of the top items there is working with Lunenburg Regional on a strategic training plan.
Yeah, and I think part of it is on this year's, your application form. You're asking for how many people are level one and how many people level one certified, so that you can start having real numbers as to where these people, where your firefighters stand within that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to come in this year, and you'll have that information.
There's a little pushback on that, but it's explainable when you talk through it.
Yes. And I put this on the agenda because I was at a Lunenburg Regional meeting where they talked about that, and, you know, some of the folks there were uncomfortable about the liability associated with this, right? And you know, they didn't say that it wasn't necessary. It wasn't the issue. The issue was the liability. Qualified person, non-qualified. It's like pump test, and it's like these tests. Why are we doing these things? You know, and they were concerned about that. Yes, Patricia.
Well, what's the difference between the level one and the level one certified?
So a level one training is you take all the so there's a bunch of core competencies that you have to take. In order to, so you have to do like hose and fire control, building instructions. So there's a whole chapter on each type of, what's the proper word for that, Emily?
Module.
It's your foundation.
Yeah, so each skill set you have to be trained in, and then you have to prove that you're competent to it. Like you do like a theory session, and then you come and do a live weekend where you actually do the actual training on the stuff that you've learned. So you actually do some practical skills, so how to put a ladder up properly, how to climb a ladder properly. So all those things are like part of the basic skills. Hose handling, water streams, fire behavior. So all those things are part of the level one basic stuff that you need to know if you're going to enter into a building that's on fire. What's it telling you when you walk in there? And you need to know what the building construction might be by looking at like the age of a building, if it's a new constructed building, so you know what fire is going to do to that structure if you need to go in it, or maybe you shouldn't go in it, depending on that, right? So those are some of the training things that you go through. The basic stuff to keep you safe before you go do any of that, right? And then your command structure's on top of that, so they have a lot of that background knowledge and everything before they ask that to be done. But the basic firefighter still needs to know the basic tasks to do it. So we have three tags in our county, a green tag, a silver tag, and a red tag. So the green tag is like an entry-level person that's just learning. They can go to the fire ground. In most cases, they can help do things, but they don't go into the hot zone or the area where the fire is, smoke or anything like that. There's a zone they call the hot zone, cold zone, warm zone. So when you're in the hot zone, you're inside the building, you're doing exterior attack, whatever it is. Anybody that's inside the building is supposed to be red tag, or they should be red tag trained. So certified is the Pro Board of Nova Scotia through Nova Scotia Firefighter School. So the Fire Marshal and the Nova Scotia Firefighter School are the ones that are certified to do the Pro Board test. So you go into the fire school, their instructors are certified to be able to do that Pro Board test. So you do a written exam, and you go in on the weekend and you do your fire training, you do live fire. And if they pass those, you get your level one Pro Board certification, which is good for North America, to join Career Fire Service if you so desire. That's what it's intended for. And if I'm wrong, Emily, you can step in and correct me with that. And then if you just take the basic training and get the training level, so you take all the modules, you just don't go and challenge the Pro Board certification part of it, right? So you take all the training, you just don't get the final big certification that says you've taken that extra training to a level.
Yes. So just to clarify then, if you do training but don't challenge for the Pro Board, are you a silver tag?
You can be a red tag.
Red tag, but you're just not certified.
You can be a red tag without doing the certification as long as you've completed the level one training. And is that consistent for every department?
Yeah, pretty much, I think.
Yeah. And that's all, if you go to FSANs, and you said they all only require be trained. You don't have to be certified yet.
Okay.
It's what they, as long as you're level one trained.
So that this year we'll at least have that information.
Certification comes with a professional firefighter.
Yeah, it's like some of our members do, some of us don't.
Yeah, I'm level one certified. Like I took the Pro Board twice, one for commercial, once for structural. So,
what is a silver tag?
Silver tag is a warm zone. You're allowed. You can wear a BA, but on the outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are actually some departments, though, that will allow a silver tag member to do interior operations with an experienced red tag.
And how do you get a silver tag?
By taking a majority of that basic foundational training that Chris said, but not the entirety of it. But it's the vast majority of those basic skills.
So just to expand on that a little more, so each of those color sections that Lunenburg Regional has, like they just passed an operating guideline on this through Lunenburg Regional. And so you have certain levels of training for the green tag. And then if you want to be a silver tag, you move up and do a next number of training sessions or whatever you need to do to be that. And if interior, then you do the full barrage of all that training and all the document to be that red tag. So most people will move up through that to be a red tag if they're doing that progress or that progression, if that's what they aspire to be, right? Some people may not want to go inside and they just want to stay that silver tag person, so they'll just be an exterior firefighter. So that's kind of how it's set up. That's kind of how the OG reads, and it kind of steps through what training you are for each one of those different levels. I think it's a pretty good system. We just need more people to take the training.
Yeah. So a piece of data that we're working on getting is how many of our 600-some volunteers are...
Level one. And so then how many of those level one are certified. So you'll have three numbers, presumably.
Yeah.
Those that have no training or minimal, and those that are level one, and those level one certified.
So another piece of data that's useful for the committee is how many departments are following that GOG that says you can't enter the hot zone unless you have that red tag.
And does every fire department have red certified?
They did discuss that.
So we will be able to answer that question after the registration packages are done this year.
Can you answer that?
I'm fairly,
that makes me nervous.
Fairly safe to say that every department that I can think of in Lunenburg County would have a few red tags. Whether they have enough to meet the two-in, two-out guideline without calling mutual aid, I don't know. But I will say that is why we have a very robust, very excellent mutual aid system in this county.
That's true.
And that is something that, you know, we don't talk about enough. We have a very good mutual aid system in Lunenburg County. And goes into Queens and Annapolis sometimes, too. So.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that's being asked for on this year for extra. And it's not part of the registration per se, but it's just asking them for how many departments have automatic mutual aid and what that looks like.
Yeah.
And I get some questions on why do we need to know that, but I answer that for them.
So, again, we have some fire departments who are exterior only. Do they need to be red certified for exterior structures?
No.
No. So you could have fire departments that are exterior. I believe maybe Lapland is exterior only.
No, if I remember right, everybody has a mark on their thing that they'll do structural, and some say they do structural and defensive. So I would say it depends on the time of day and who's around, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yes, Patricia.
So does it go green, silver, red, and then you've achieved level one, or is level one green, level one,
so
silver?
So level one would be if you had all of the training through all those three levels.
Okay.
That would be your level one training.
Certification.
And if you take the certification, then you're actually going into the fire school and challenging their exam and their program. So you go and do everything that somebody that went through that program, you go in and challenge all the different aspects of it, right? So
just being green doesn't make you level one.
No.
No.
So that's like really the first entry level, like to start moving into the areas.
What a green tag really is, it's just the beginning of the fire service. So you're going to be the one that's going to be doing the traffic to a degree. You're going to be bringing stuff like hose for the guys. switching out bottles, that kind of stuff. And then as you move up on your training, then you become a silver tank, get to do a little more stuff. So it's just the entry level.
I just didn't know, like, if it's all considered level one, and then level one green, level one silver, level one red at the highest, and then level one certified.
Yeah. So the green tag, you get started. I got it. Silver tag's a little more, and the red tag can do anything.
And then level one.
No, level one is your red tag.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, I don't know what when you see the fire service in action when they come together, you wouldn't think that they're separate departments. And I've heard different residents say that when fire departments show up on site, that when you have 3, 4, 5, 6 different fire departments all working together, they say they're hard to believe that they're all separate entities because they work so well together. And that's because we've been doing it for so long that it really does work well. And it's, you know, when it works well. So.
Certainly enough discussion on the fit tester, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's enough discussion on the fit tester because I think from that you've got the LRFES Strategic Initiatives Committee that is looking at stuff coming back on this year's registration form, which will be information for the committee to actually start looking at some of those things. And then we can really look back at 6.2, which is the committee work plan, which is...
So we did a strategic priority. Yeah. We still have items on the list.
Are. Yeah, that's
so maybe 6.2. That should be coming back to the next meeting to prioritize, or do we have a list of we know where we're going?
So the work plan that the committee approved for me to work at, Alex and I talked about this, and we're going to come up with a little piece that's going to come to every meeting that has not every piece into it, but the major points. So just as a refresher for the committee, as here's what we're going to work on.
Yeah, and things need to be worked at so that we can, in the six meetings in a year, that we can, you know.
Because I've had several chiefs call me and tell me that, you know, we'd like to certain things worked at. So I can bring that back to the committee, too. But a couple things they asked for was, like, a generic application form, more level one type training. I've had several ask me that. And a personnel type policy or something that could be utilized by everybody. And I mentioned that at the last Lunenburg region meeting. So I've had several discussions with chiefs on that. That we're interested in that stuff. So that's all part of that work plan and process too, right? So
for item number 3, we can bring that stuff back to that material back to the next meeting.
I have it right here, Sandra, if you would put the podium screen up. Go to video switching. So this is on our website. It's because it was in the agenda package for the November 2023 meeting, and so the committee approved this plan. It had a couple of theme areas. So the first one's safety, second one's capacity and governance, the third was recruitment and retention, and finally we had the regional training facility. So under safety, so we've moved ahead with this. We've explained at the annual meeting that we will be requiring the functional testing for the SCBAs. Chris, number 2, has updated the agenda, or the registration package to get that data on level 1 firefighters. And then this one still needs work. It's working with Lunenburg Regional on, because they have reinvigorated their GOG committee, which ones should be adopted across all departments. I think we hit upon an important one this evening that would be really great to have in place.
I guess, Alex, to that, if through the chair, even if they came back a few at a time, like if they would recommend some that we
absolutely
could get rolled out,
I think
we don't need a complete package.
No, you don't.
I think that if you started it, and it may not be as overwhelming to some if they didn't get them all at once.
Yeah, I would suggest that the committee would want to take a similar approach so that... where we started requiring mandatory equipment testing, first on pumps and then on SCBA, you know, it's we didn't all of a sudden say, okay, now you have to test every single piece of equipment in order to be registered. Similarly, Lunenburg Regional has been developing GOGs for quite some time, and it's great that they're back at it, they're refreshing and making some new ones. This is sort of looking at the next step of saying, are there some that we can agree upon as a group of fire service providers that we all should be following? And then we would move towards having those as a mandatory component. You know, as part of your registration, you've agreed only firefighters with a certain level of training will enter the hot zone. our department has that GOG in place, so we know that's consistent across the departments. I think that that's a great example and a likely first step that the committee should be looking at in order to target what was really the heart of the issues there around, like, training and safety. The GOGs will be a vehicle for you to get there, but you certainly can't come in and wholesale say, now you need to adopt them. These are all volunteer organizations.
There's volunteers working at those.
They're all doing, exactly, yeah.
Doing the best they can.
Yeah. So the pace that you've been taking on the equipment is an appropriate one, and you should be looking at something similar for the governance side of things. So speaking of governance, we have four items there. So one is working on a training strategy with Lunenburg Regional. So those discussions have started.
So I just want to go to that first bullet there, the level one firefighting training. And that was offered here in this area on weekends, was it not? Is that something that annually is held here?
Yes. Yes.
So has it started again?
It is underway right now. It is not a firm calendar schedule, but we have one. It's worked out that this is the third one in the last 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. And roughly how many people are enrolled in this one?
There's 20 right now.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
There's definitely a demand for it.
Yep.
It's an incredible thing to see happen. Chris tells me that the volunteers running it are doing a fantastic job. I'm concerned for the sustainability of it. I don't understand how folks have time to volunteer with their fire departments and then also run level one firefighter training.
Passion.
So, that's the people.
Passion and dedication, that's for sure, right?
I'm concerned about burnout.
Yeah.
And I would like for the municipality and this committee to speak with Lunenburg Regional about what are strategic approaches that we can take so that we have the ability to train more level one firefighters without burning out some of our own stellar volunteers here in the area.
So are there people qualified to, and I know, does everyone that has a level one, are they qualified to teach? Is that how it works? So we say we have volunteers teaching the level one now. Is that what we have?
Yes. Yeah. Volunteer firefighters are teaching other volunteer firefighters. That's the essence of the program. Yeah.
Okay. And that certification works?
Well, it's not certification. It's what we call an orientation. So you're trained to the standard. But the certification is
would
what
have
Chris
to go
was talking
back to the fire school.
You have to go up into Halifax
to challenge
to do that.
The exam.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess the reason they started this was the demand was there, the call was there, and the call was higher than what you can put people through, right? Because they could probably put two or three of those on a year, but they just don't have the people to be able to do that. Yeah. So they did 18 or 20 last year, and the same the year before, probably.
It was slightly fewer. But that started in, was it 2022 we started the first one? And that was the first level one, organized level one that had been done in the county since 2018?
Yeah,
maybe?
COVID. It was pre-COVID.
We stopped before COVID stopped us.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So there was quite a buildup of demand.
So the municipality provides a training grant that this could be used towards. So when you're talking about succession planning or talking about burnout, is there an opportunity to use training grant to hire somebody to do this?
So I'll just give you a little idea. So if you
have no idea.
20 people, and if you use the fire school, you're looking at around $2,000 per firefighter.
Okay.
So there's so you got 20 people at $2,000 a piece.
$1,745, I think it is.
Isn't that per person? Because they have a different, there's different levels that they'll offer it at.
Yeah, because we've had probably seven or eight that needed level one since pre-COVID. So we're actually we're putting on a level one starting in September through the fire school in our department.
And this includes your BA and everything, correct?
That's everything.
Yeah.
1,700 and change per person.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
It's good training.
Yeah. It's something to keep in mind. Like, training is expensive. Equipment is expensive. It's not that as a collective we're not investing in the fire service. You know, that collectively there's $4.7 million going towards, it's collected through the fire tax and then provided directly to the responding organizations. On top of that, the municipality is now at about $500,000. So this is money that we're putting into the volunteer service. And part of your work as a committee is to identify, is this going in to be spent on the most strategic and best bang for the buck items? So if it turns out that, you know, you get all your data back and you identify, like, we really need a level one firefighter training program, then you have that conversation with Lunenburg Regional.
Exactly.
What's that 10 grand going for? What are you using it for? Can we use it, a portion of that, to create a fund, to work with other departments? Whatever concepts might make sense. Out of that budget, you also, the Lunenburg training grant comes out of the $500,000 from the municipal budget. We also have $10,000 in a grant, which is application-based, directed towards human resources and leadership development, which we saw as an important gap when we did our recruitment and retention strategy, identifying that it was difficult, especially where we had some older chiefs who had not been exposed to any kind of, like, management concepts, human resources, and, you know, sometimes you get there because you know how to run a fire scene, not necessarily how to manage volunteers. So we have that program in place, and maybe more investment needs to be done there. Maybe those funds could be used in a different way. But as a committee, you have lots of leeway to figure out how you want to recommend to council that that budget gets allocated, and you have your willing and able partners in the Lunenburg Regional Fire Service group to help come up with creative ideas and develop GOGs and those kinds of things. So that actually comes up there as the three items there in your training. You have the level one firefighter, your leadership and human resource development, and then enhanced opportunities for regional training. So we know that there are departments that do joint training. I believe it. Most of Pleasantville, Conquerel Bank, and La Have, most of their training is done cooperatively. And when we were working with them on the regionalization project, they identified, I think, Hebville was also doing training with them. So we know that there's groups already doing this. Maybe there's a way we can work with Lunenburg Regional to leverage that. So I'm personally quite excited about what Lunenburg Regional might be able to come up with as a training strategy. But the committee identified that as a key area to work on. The other two items, four items there in capacity and government. So the leadership training program that Chris manages out of that grant fund. As Chris already mentioned, work with Lunenburg Regional on developing a standard personnel policy for optional adoption by departments, similar to the GOGs, but helping with some of those sort of human resources side of things. And then automatic mutual aid. So Chris has started the data collection for that. Recruitment and retention. This wasn't a new item. We've got a strategy going, but we wanted to identify it's still important. It's a critical issue for the fire service. And then the regional training facility. So the next step. The council has set up the reserve fund. There's now $200,000 contributions in that fund. The next step, Chris and I will be working on a discussion paper on the concept to bring to this group that will then circulate to Lunenburg Regional on what other facilities have looked like in other regions that have done those kinds of things, and what things might need to be discussed and who our possible partners might be. So that from a staff perspective, we feel like the committee has given excellent, clear direction on what we should be working on. I don't know if that answers the agenda request that
it
you...
It does.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Just needed the members to see, you know, refreshed, and new members as well.
Alex, can you forward that to me?
So, Dean, you had a question.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
I just let Alex know that the training committee for the Bloomberg Regional, they are planning a regional training day. They were tentatively going to have it the first week of June, but it worked out the same day as Michelin Safety Day, so they're going to kind of work around it.
Yep.
So that's, they're trying to have two a year now.
Oh, great.
So, which is a start. Yep. We haven't had one for a couple of years.
It's been a long time.
So that's a start. Secondly, for training, like for different training things, I've been asked numerous times for the ICS 200. They're being put on, but they're being put on during the day. And most of our members can't take them during the day because they can't get off work. Okay. I would love to host one in our department on a weekend, but because we got members that would love to take it, but just they can't take days off.
Yeah, well, we organize those and participate in them regularly within the municipal staff level for our REMO group. So if it's a timing issue, then I'm sure that we can work around that.
Because I got a couple that would love to have the ICS 200.
Yep.
What is ICS?
It's the command structure. It's 200. It's a 100, 200, 300.
And a 4.
Just understanding.
By the time I get to a 4, we're not going to need.
When there's an incident, what the specific roles are, and it's used across North America. So, you know, an emergency manager like Angela can go volunteer in Alberta and just slip right in to their command system.
If you're following, just for instance, down in Baltimore, every time you hear an update, they're all talking about the ICS. Structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a command. So.
All right. So we're good on that. Item 7, the added items, which is none that I'm aware of. Unless, Alex, you want to go in camera.
No, thank you.
Then we are, in fact, looking for a motion to adjourn. Then.
So move.
Been moved.
Second it.
Thank you all. Safe travels.